Let's get wild in the kitchen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hope everyone's hungry.
Brandon, like, he'll put that in to the show right off the top, too. That's what he does to me.
I mean, special bloopers. Ones that make me giggle, I always keep in there, yeah.
Natalie, fire it up.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Due North Outdoors podcast. I'm Natalie Dillon, joined by my co-host, Travis Frank. We are here at headquarters in the Twin Cities, but as we talk today, we're discussing State Fair.
On the State Fair. Uh-huh. I think most people go there for the food.
Yeah.
If not most, I'd say a lot of them go there for the food. And I was just thinking about this the other day. Just up the street, we're in the North Woods. It's a section of the State Fair. There's a restaurant called Giggles Campfire Grill. And there's two things that I have to get at the State Fair every single year. It's the walleye cakes and the duck wontons are by far. I've tried a lot of fair food. Those two items are my absolute favorite.
Walleye cakes. More than cheese curds?
Yes. Walleye cakes and the duck wontons. There's this dipping sauce that comes with it, Natalie. It is to die for. I cannot leave the fair without trying it. I try it and tell me I'm wrong. Good. That's all I'm saying.
Are you setting us up for a segue here?
I think we
can. Because that's a really good setup.
Yeah, we can reveal what we want to talk about today.
So on today's episode, and we promise we're getting somewhere, but we knew heading into this, it'd be a little bit of a jumbled mess of a few things, but the main thing that we're going to be talking about today is wild game and fish. So some of our favorite things to eat, some of our favorite recipes. And I have to ask what you were just talking about. Have you gotten the recipes for them? Have you tried to make them?
No, I haven't. I've made duck wontons. Brandon and I just recorded a different podcast for the Upland bird hunting TV show that we host called The Flush. And we got into all kinds of food. And one of the topics was pheasant rangoon. And which I thought, you know, when we walked through it, it was like cream cheese wontons.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I made sharp-tail grouse wontons with my kids last year. My wife and I did. And she, you know, we like to make recipes that are hands-on with our kids, especially when it comes to wild game. It's just fun. But that one was pretty good. It's not quite like the duck wontons, but it had some similarities to it. I've not dug into their recipe. It's one of those things where it's like you just let it be and enjoy it when you're there. And who knows, maybe it's the atmosphere that makes it good too.
That always adds to it, but sounds good. I'm going to try them this year and I might try to recreate them.
Do it. And then share the recipe with me and maybe our listeners.
Yeah. And so before we get into our favorite recipes, you were just on a trip last week.
Yeah, I was on an island on Lake of the Woods for 4 days, 5 days, something like that. And I think, you know, when you and I were texting about this show, that really kind of triggered the food side of the wild game and what we like to do in the outdoor world, because there is nothing in the freshwater fishing area that we have here that compares to shore lunch of a freshly caught walleye that you pulled up on an island, you cleaned within an hour of catching it, and you cook it. It's partly the taste of the food, but partly just the setting. Mm-hmm. And so every time that I have that, I'm like, gosh, this is why, Natalie, I have never ordered walleye off a menu at a restaurant in my entire life. And I never will.
Yeah.
If you've ordered walleye in a restaurant, I don't think you understand that it's a completely different food group.
I love that you bring it up because this was my first entrance too into eating something that I caught myself. And it was exactly that, Northern Minnesota walleye shore lunch. And I do remember thinking at the time, is the fish really this much better? Or is it just because I'm in great company and it's beautiful? But it's both. Isn't anything better than fish that was just caught an hour before.
When I go hunting, it's the exact same way. I go camp out on the prairie bird hunting pretty regularly for our TV shows. And I try to eat at least one meal right there, right in the field. And every single time, whoever we're with, does not matter what we make, they're like, this is the best that it's ever been. And it's because one time I'm thinking back to being out in the Badlands of North Dakota, and there was antelope, or they're off on this one ridge, and then there's just a herd of cattle grazing over here, and these rolling bluffs, and the sun is setting, and you just put on these miles, and the dogs are tired, and You know, you just cook up this meal, and we did sharp-tailed grouse, and we picked the berries off of the trees that we flushed the birds in. And it was just like, we made this sauce, we smushed up the berries, and it was just this, like, unbelievable meal. And when you're out there in the same place that you harvested, whether it's fish out on an island or in the field, there's just something about it. And if you can cook it over an open fire, it just makes it that
another
much
dimension.
Better. Another dimension. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Yep. So you've been hunting and fishing for food that you've kept really your whole life. Is it just about the flavor and the experience for you? Or are there other reasons that you've fallen in love with, you know, getting your own food like that?
There's this unexplainable reward that comes from it. If you go out there on your own and you harvest it, you bring it back, you take good, I try my best to take good care of the meat, fish, or wild game, whatever I'm hunting. And then I, you know, whatever I deem to be, like, if I, when I take a deer, the tenderloins are the first thing. Like, I don't really ever freeze them. It's just, I know either that night or the next night or within the next couple nights, we're having tenderloins on the grill. And there's, you know, there's just this, like, we did that, you know, and it all came together, and whoever I've enjoyed that hunt with gets to be a part of it. You know, there are some cuts of meat that are just awesome and some fish, and I've been spoiled as a person that lives near great fishing and, you know, being a fishing guide for so long, but also just, you know, when I eat fish, I eat it fresh. I haven't frozen a fish in over 30 years, I believe, unless I do try to give my grandma a meal of walleye from time to time. So every once in a while, if I don't get to see her right away, I will freeze some and then bring it out to her. But I personally myself don't keep a fish that I know I won't eat before the, you know, before they might spoil.
Yeah. And it is hard to explain. You were just kind of alluding to it, but that feeling of, you know, eating food that you just harvested yourself. It's like, it's very human, you know, it's like getting back to your roots. And for me, I love it too, because you know, the quality of the food is very high and it's, you know, a respectful way to eat fish or eat meat, and it's just yummy.
You know where it came from.
Exactly.
Nobody else between you and that creature.
I'm giggling over here because Travis and I both saw my phone just lit up. My mom's calling me. I'm watching their dog right now.
You gotta take this call.
Yeah, everyone could just wait. I'm watching their dog right now.
Bring her on air.
He's doing well, Mom. Yeah, I should bring Benny here next time.
Bring her on air.
Yeah, yes. He deserves to meet all the other Ron Shara
pups. We've got Daisy
pups
laying over here, passed out by the door, wishing she was not in this room with us right now, instead chasing
listening
something.
Listening to us yap.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, Natalie, so we did ask again about some listener questions regarding cooking, preparing food. So do you want to get into that? Or you and I have each brought a handful of different wild game food recipes that we want to share.
Let's jump into the recipes and we can kind of incorporate, I think, the listener questions as we go.
Okay.
That sound good?
That sounds good.
Do you want to kick us off or should I?
I will start with walleye since we just talked about it. So I've had walleye in a lot of different ways. And this one, I'm going to give my dad the credit for this recipe. There's not a name for it. It's something that a lot of people will be like, duh. But there's a little bit of a twist to this recipe that I think kind of just like puts it at another level. When I make it for people, they are like, that's the best walleye I think I've ever had. And there's a very popular breading in the Midwest called Shore Lunch. And it involves that. But there's a couple of steps to it. So you have your fillets. You can either cube them up or leave it as a whole fillet. I like to cube up the fillet because when I'm putting those into the hot oil, I want to be able to separate a thinner piece of meat from a thicker one because you don't want to overcook a thinner one and undercook a thicker one. You want them to be able to cook at their own pace and take them out of the oil at their own pace. So I like to cube up a walleye fillet. But first, what I do is I got this fillet, cube it up. I dry off both sides of the fillet of fish. I just think that's an important step in the whole process. Dry fillet, then I roll it in a mix of 50-50 Shore Lunch. 50% of it is Cajun style short lunch. 50% is regular. I want just a little bit of bite. I don't want to be extremely spicy. So I do half and half there. So dry filet, roll it in that 50-50 mix of short lunch. Then I have a separate container with egg whites that are beat. Mm-hmm. Not the whole egg, not the big orange in the middle. Just the
How
egg.
How does that change it for you?
It just, the egg whites, I want a light coating on the piece of meat. Okay, so I dip it in the short lunch, then I dip it in the egg whites, then I take it out and I roll it in panko crumbs. Now, don't get Italian flavored panko crumbs. It ruins this whole thing. Yeah. I learned that on accident. I was so excited. We're up in a lodge in Canada like 5 years ago. I'm like, guys,
no,
I'm
grocery store down
wait
the street.
Till you try this. And then I looked at it. I'm like, what did I do? This is terrible.
Bummer.
It ruined it. So don't do Cajun, just regular. And what you end up with is like it, that egg white locks in that flavoring, a little bit of Cajun to it. So it's got a little flavor. And then you put the panko crumbs on the outside and now you've got this crunch. So it's like a Kentucky Fried Chicken crunch to it on the outside, but it's not over the top. If you have water on the filet, it clumps up all of these ingredients. If you have too much, you know, that's why you do egg whites. You just want a thin layer so that you can taste the fish. You got a little bit of crunch to it. You've got everything. And then you deep fry it, you know, brown on both sides.
This is important. I don't know if you're going to get there or not. Something I was hoping to talk about. What? The big question is, what oil do you use?
Oh, I've gone back and forth with a lot of different oils, and I can't seem to say that, you know, from peanut oil to vegetable oil. I don't know. I feel like I'm always experimenting with stuff, even this recipe. I don't do it every time. I'll bake fish. I'll grill fish. I'll try a little bit of everything. I'm always mixing it up, but I feel like I end up going back to vegetable oil. And I don't know if that's the right thing to do. You might be able to tell
me. So just for flavor wise, I was told years ago, peanut oil is the way to go. And I've done peanut oil and then some other vegetable oils and those. It's like, you don't ever really know what
it doesn't live up to
anyway.
The peanut. Are you saying?
I think the peanut's the best. Yeah. And that's strictly from a flavor profile. It's, I mean, it doesn't taste like peanuts, but it's just a little bit richer.
Yeah.
And I think I don't know if it's just that I do, you know, I don't know if it's coincidence, but I feel like the fish is actually fried better in it too. So.
Could be. Yeah. I mean, you
people,
obviously don't
want
to. A
lot of people are really partial to their oils.
And the thing is, somebody listening right now, they're like, oh, he missed this step or that. Like, there are so many ways to deep fry fish and so many recipes out there, and everyone has them. Brandon, you've got one.
Yeah, we used to use like the Crisco vegetable shortening and stuff like that.
Yep.
We fried up our fish as kids.
Yeah.
Easy to transport.
And if you have a deep fryer, I feel like you get just like the perfect coating.
Yeah.
I like to cook on a cast iron. The last couple of years, almost everything I cook, my wife and I, it's on cast iron. And
it holds the heat really well.
It does.
Evenly. Yeah.
Yep. And so then you're flipping them. Whereas if you've got a deep fryer, you can drop them in and then take them out, you know, in 3 minutes. You don't want to overcook them. That just, you know, you don't want it to be tough. You get that perfect gold on both sides and take it off.
Yeah.
And then my kids just hammer it. And sometimes I'm like, guys, you didn't save any for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a sign of a good chef.
Yep.
Don't get any left for you.
Yep. I love, one thing though that I've learned with that recipe is that it's a little too much on bluegills or
just too heavy.
Fish. Yeah. Because you've got enough meat in a thick walleye fillet. You know, if you've got a 16, 18 inch walleye, the meat is thick enough where you don't typically get that on most bluegills or perch or crappie. So then I don't go with that recipe on that fish because I want to taste the fish. I like the taste of fish. And if there's too much breading and seasoning on it, then that dominates it. And I don't want it to dominate that. So that's kind of my favorite way to prepare walleye.
Yeah. Do you do like lemon or anything with it or just?
You can.
Okay.
Yeah. You can add your own seasonings on top of it, but you get a little bit of that. You know, I salt it typically. I'll do just salt on it because the Cajun adds a little bit of flavor to it. And then you would mix up your flavors a little bit. So I tend to just salt it. That'd be the only thing after the fact. Yep.
So while we're talking walleyes, I mean, frying it's the way to go. And what I do is very similar. I've used shore lunch a bunch of times, especially if I'm like going, you know, ice fishing or whatever or up north and going to cook, you know, where I am, like right on the lake. That's an easy way to do it. But I did a few years ago look up a recipe for, you know, making your own quote unquote shore lunch. And that is something I've played around with a little bit now. And so what I've done is you do like regular white flour. Mm-hmm. And then, and I don't know if this is in shore lunch, but cornmeal. And what I do, there's a, forget, it's called like pan, this, the brand of this cornmeal that you can buy. And it's what you make arepas out of. If you've ever made an arepa, I don't know. I like making them, but, it's basically just like yellow cornmeal. And if you add a yep. little bit of that, it adds a really good texture to it. If it's going to be different than like the panko, like that crisp crunch, it's going to be like a little bit heavier, yep. but that,
not quite a beer batter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then just, you know, salt, pepper, garlic powder, maybe onion powder, cayenne pepper. You can kind of mix up your own. So it's fun to experiment. And you can also make it ahead of time, put it in a jar, and then bring it with you. So.
Absolutely. And on the flour topic, too, flour allows you to kind of get a little bit of a breading, but it allows you to add those flavors like you just
yeah.
mentioned there. So there's some times where I'll do that as well. Like I said, the fun about cooking fish is there's so many ways to do it. And one thing that I've learned about over time, you know, like when we go to the Boundary Waters, a group of buddies and I, every year, we that's our staple meal for the day is mm-hmm. walleye. You know, that's our dinner meal. And after, if you do in pan, a pan fried meal of fish every day, like the oil just, like yeah. it's yeah. uncomfortable.
It's a lot.
Like my arteries, I feel like they're clogged yeah. up and I'm not 100% me. Yeah.
So you then, start like sweating oil. Yeah.
Yes, totally. It's not needed all the time, which is yeah. why I've really gotten into baking fish, mm-hmm. air frying fish, and grilling fish too. There's some ways where you can just, you know, salt and pepper, lemon pepper is really mm-hmm. good on a fillet, and you can leave the skin on. Put them over an open fire, or put them on the grill that way, and then you basically just eat it right off of the skin like that. It's yeah. so good too, and then you don't have any of the oil or grease.
Yeah, I was just looking. I think that one of our listeners asked about not frying fish. I can't find it. Maybe you can find it as I go through this. But so one of my favorite ways to bake fish that it tastes kind of like you fried it. It gets nice and crisp and crunchy, mm-hmm. but without the oil, is just doing a mixture of panko, breadcrumbs, cayenne pepper, and parsley, and then dipping the fish. And I always do the full egg, but maybe I should try just doing egg white, dipping it in that, and then the breadcrumbs. And
it feels like it's lighter.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like,
yeah,
I don't know how to
that.
Explain it differently. If you just do the egg whites, it feels like it's lighter.
Yeah. You can do the same breading
here.
And just, yeah, bake it in the oven. To me, if it's like walleye, it's probably going to be a little less tasty without the frying it, but
okay.
yummy too.
So on this, since we're on walleyes right now, we do have some listener questions mm-hmm. that I think we can touch on at this point. So Dave Vollmer says, do you recommend bleeding your fish in the live well? Is it dependent on how long before they will be clean, as in a couple hours from the lake to home? So that is a very good question. Typically what I do is shortly before I leave the lake, I've got walleye in the live well of my boat, swimming there, happy. They don't know what's about to hit them. Or maybe they do because they've been in this little 4-foot box. But anyway, 15, 20 minutes before I leave the lake, I will, this is graphic, but I will essentially go in. There's an artery that connects their gill plates. And you can either stick your finger in there. Daisy, watch out. She's pulling on the cords here. But basically you go in and you can just pull that apart mm-hmm. and it's their main artery and they just start bleeding in the live well. Or you can take a knife and just cut right underneath their neck basically and you're going to bleed them out. And what that does is essentially they swim in the water and within about a minute, they're completely void of any blood that's left in their bodies. So you end up with a perfectly white fillet. It's great when you clean the fish, you don't have a mess, but all the blood is completely out. So it's like, you look at it when you're done cleaning, like, holy cow, it looks like, you know, somebody washed up.
It's
the deal. It's the way to go mm-hmm. for sure.
Well, it's also, it is the most humane for the fish. It's the quickest way really for them to go.
I don't know.
I think so. I mean, it looks really graphic, but it's better than.
Let me slit your throat.
I think it's better. I mean, like you see people out ice fishing, just letting the fish
freeze
on the
ice.
And to me, I don't know. I'm not a fish myself, but I feel like that's slower and more uncomfortable.
I'm not a fish myself.
If you weren't away.
Yeah, if anyone's taking Natalie out, she wants to go that way.
So is that going to be how we open the podcast? Are you going to take that sound bite? I'm not a fish myself.
Yeah. That's the title of the episode.
Yeah, how Natalie wants to go out.
But I do think that that is, I think it's a humane way to kill him.
Well, it's definitely the way to get rid of the blood. We'll just leave it at that. So I do that, but here's the thing. When the water's warm during the summer, I wouldn't do that right away. I wouldn't do that hours before I'm going to leave the lake. Some people do it right away when they throw it in. I don't want that. I don't want the fish sitting in warm water because they're then sitting, you know, like you want to take care of your meat. Doesn't matter mm-hmm. what kind of animal or bird or fish that you harvest. You want to take care of that meat. So it's alive right before I'm heading in. I circulate the water in there, get fresh water, and let the bleed out. Then my fillets are great. I keep them cold right away. I don't want to let them heat up. I want to get the fish cleaned as soon as possible. And then you're left with just this ideal fillet. There's a line of bones that run down the center of most fish in the ribs. Some people call it the zipper. And basically, if you take the narrow part, the part of the fillet down by the tail, there's a line running through dead center all the way down the fillet. If you make a small little quarter inch incision on both sides of that, you can grab the fillet and literally just pull it apart into two long strips. There's that line of bones that run through the middle. I do that on all of them, especially a lot of people, or my dad would always say growing up, they cook out. True for some people, not my little 4-year-old girl, and my wife doesn't like any bones in there too. So I make sure that I take that little zipper out as well, which like I mentioned, I like to cube them up so that each piece of meat can come out when it's ready.
Yeah.
So that's how I prepare a fish for eating, a walleye anyway.
Well, we're talking about filleting fish. I know Mitch Thornton asked, and I think a few others for tips for filleting fish. I think it's probably a little bit difficult. You just did a great job, but to articulate too much, you know, just in a podcast, but are there resources that you'd recommend people to look at? Whether it's like, do you know of any great like YouTube channels or books or anything that are how to filleting? Because I learn from people in person and I'm still not great at it. And I'm a believer that like it takes a lot of practice and a really sharp knife, but just kind of practice. But there's probably some great resources online to find too.
Well, you actually just cued into something that's really important. The most dangerous thing you can ever use to cut up any of your wild game fish, birds, or animals, deer, is a dull knife. Mm-hmm. That is how you cut yourself.
It's counterintuitive,
but a dull knife will hurt more people in the process than a sharp knife. So you always want to keep knife sharp. You always want to keep the knife sharp, Natalie. It's super important. But what I was going to say to that is you can look at any YouTube video. You can search how to fillet a walleye. You're going to get a lot of results. But if you have somebody that's willing to show you, you can learn really quickly. My grandpa and my dad both taught me when I was really young. So I've been filleting fish since I was probably 7 years old, somewhere in there. My two boys now are already cleaning fish, which is great. They love it. Yes, I got a Rapala fillet knife for my son on his 8th birthday, and it's his own knife, and we did a little wood-burning W on the bottom of it, so it's always going to be his. And those knives might last a lifetime. You know, that's a cool thing about it. So he's got his own, and he loves to be a part of it too. Just having somebody that's willing to help you through the process
person yourself if you are experienced.
Totally. Yep, just the angle on how to hold it. It makes a big difference than just watching somebody.
One more walleye recipe you could really use you could use crappie or bluegill for this, but if you have gone through the process already of deep frying it and you just want to spice it up a little, my favorite is just to deep fry it and put some lemon on top and eat it. Mm-hmm. But some really good, just kind of basic, simple fish tacos. I love doing flour tortilla. I like corn tortilla for like different meats, but for fish, I like a flour tortilla, your fried fish, super simple, but you know, 50-50 mayo and sriracha mix. You'll see that type of thing at a lot of restaurants. It's all you need, a little salt if you want to add to it. And then white cabbage, parsley, and cojita cheese or queso fresco, that like kind of crumbly, it's a firm cheese, but it's like very mild in flavor and you can crumble it over the top. And that is all you need. A couple lime slices.
That just got summertime, me excited. Brandon's over here excited. Oh my gosh. So I have this fish taco recipe too. Now we're going to get so sidetracked here. That's like, I got to stop. I got to stop. But the cabbage adds like this crunch to it. It's so good. Like you got to add the cabbage to it. It's,
and I like really, really small pieces of cabbage. So I try to like slice it really thin. Or if you
I'm lazy and I buy the pack.
Yeah. Yep. And then it's good to kind of run. I don't know. I like kind of running a knife through that too so that it's. Just a little bit smaller. Overachiever.
You know, you've got more time.
Well, I can pretend like it's homemade when I just run my knife through a cabbage
bag. The carrot in there. Oh, gosh. Yeah, like the pre-made cabbage bags or whatever, for sure.
Yeah.
And sometimes even some avocado on there.
Oh. Did you say avocado?
Avocado.
Oh, avocado. I don't know.
I was going to point that out, too. I'm pretty sure I heard avocado. Yeah.
Whatever. Did you say jalapeno
You talk for an hour, Brandon. We'll pick apart yours.
Any more fish... Any more like Minnesota freshwater fish we want
to
talk about?
Another way to do the tacos, as long as we're on that, I'll take, and I'll do this with bluegills or crappie or whatever, but I will do a blackened redfish seasoning like they would do down south, and I'll put that over the top of it. And in a cast iron pan, you put just a couple of drops of olive oil in there, and then get it really hot, and you're blackening your... panfish, whatever fillet is. And then it ends up, as I'm flipping it, you know, it's really super hot. I'm burning it. I'm fine with that. It adds just another flavor to the fish. It is so good.
Yeah.
And then it's in these little tiny chunks anyway, but that's perfect for the tacos.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds really good.
It is. It's so good. Gosh, now I got to go catch some more fish.
I know. For so long. Okay. Let's shift gears so we don't get, we don't make this just a fish cooking episode.
It's the season though. So it's fine.
It is true. Yeah.
Yeah.
This episode of Due North Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Sportsman's Guide. For everything you need to enjoy the fun, freedom, and traditions of the outdoors, you got to check out sportsmansguide.com. From hunting and fishing to camping, hiking, and just hanging around a bonfire in the backyard, you'll find it all at Sportsman's Guide. Tree stands, blinds, rods and reels, ATV accessories, and so much more. Clothing and footwear, too, from top-notch brands like Scentlock, Nomad, Mountain Hardware, Irish Setter, Danner. Ah, the list just keeps on going. Plus, a full line of firearms, ammo, and accessories. The bottom line, if it happens outdoors, you'll find it at Sportsman's Guide. Shop today at sportsmansguide.com and use the code DUENORTH for $20 off your first order. That's DUENORTH, all one word, for $20 off your first order.
The first wild game that I ever cooked myself, or that I ever cooked... was quail. And so that's something that I have a soft spot for. And this was quail that was hunted on family friend's property down in Illinois. And the way that I did it, and this is something maybe we talked about a little bit with the morel mushrooms. I think that it's really good the first time you're eating something. I'd never tasted quail before, but to try to make it pretty simple. Like we've talked about having, the first time I had morel mushrooms, I had them deep fried and breaded and it was delicious, but I couldn't really taste them very well. Yeah. It was the same thing the first time I had pheasant, deep fried, or breaded and deep fried and it was delicious, but it just kind of tasted like fried chicken. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to, with this quail, make it pretty simple, both to make it easy on myself, but also to be able to, you know, really taste it.
I'm intrigued right now.
So in... birds like quail, they're, you know, it's small, it's very lean. So somebody asked here about cooking in butter. And I think with those types of birds, cooking in butter is very important because it adds back that
As you
fat.
Always say, Natalie, you can butter's never have too much butter. You. Butter's good
exactly.
for you.
Exactly. So what I did, and with butter, if anyone, you know, you've probably cooked with it, it can burn pretty easily. So I like doing butter, but with some olive oil in it too, so that the butter doesn't burn. So I got, you know, cast iron pan, super hot, butter, little bit of olive oil to balance it out. You can do like garlic and onion and just sear the quail. And then, and quail ahead of time was like just salt and pepper on it and that was it. And then I did a bay leaf. You could do like thyme or something like that and covered it and cooked it until the quail, the bird was cooked all the way through. Added some white wine and then took the birds out of the pan, added in a little bit of heavy cream, just a little bit. And poured what was in the pan over top of the birds. What do you think?
Sounds amazing. How was it?
Very good. Yeah. It was a long time ago and I haven't cooked it again since, but it was delicious.
Well, you need to start hunting quail then.
I know.
Or pheasant.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brandon and I pheasant hunted last year. He's still waiting on his first pheasant.
I held up the gun once.
Yeah.
I almost got a shoot once. So
what was going through your mind when you threw the gun up to your shoulder? Like, this is when it's happening? Or
Not really. I kind of knew, like, just the way the day was going. I didn't feel like it was going to be anything. And I didn't hear Rooster, so.
Yeah. Just a quick sidebar on this hunt. We went with Scott Franz and the owner of this company. We're like, he's like, yeah, I'm going to take you guys to this great spot. And, you know, anticipation was high. I'm like, all right, whatever. We got up early. We drove 2.5 hours to Western Minnesota. And he's like, okay, we're going to go here. And it was like, I don't know how or what, like every ounce of water in the county went into that section.
The
and
one spot we walked in.
Oh, boy.
You don't pheasant hunt in water. You duck hunt in water. We're wet up to.
Did you have some good boots on?
No, I didn't. I had hiking boots on. So
as
they were,
did I. Yeah. I didn't get a memo about waders.
Yeah,
and I needed waders to stay dry for how deep I. My dog went on point because it was like partially frozen in the middle of the slough, and I'm like, I got to go in there and get her out. She's not going to move until I, you know, bring her out. So I'm almost up to my pockets in my on my jeans in standing water in the middle of this cattail, and then a pheasant did get out of there. Yes, but
good.
Anyway. We are on a mission this year to get Brandon his first pheasant. Back to you, Natalie. Sorry to sidetrack.
No, that's it. That's the only... But another thing that you mentioned earlier I wanted to talk about. So I've heard a lot of people doing quail and other birds with berry sauces. And I hear people do blueberry a lot with quail.
Blueberries with grouse is pretty popular too. It's almost like you want to... And I'm a simple chef. I'm not a chef at all. I'm a simple husband that like... We've got kids and busyness, and I just make these simple meals. So, but I know people that'll do like a blueberry paste or something like that with rough grouse because they're in the same. A lot of people say you want to take the whatever you're picking, like blueberries, out of the same forest that you take the bird. I don't know why, but it goes well together. It pairs well. You know, like for sharp-tailed grouse, we were on these buffalo berry bushes out in the Badlands, and we literally flushed the coveys out of those buffalo berries, and then afterwards I went back with a little bucket and filled it up with berries, and it ended up working. We had some bee or some honey from some fresh bees on this other guy's property that came to hunt with us. Like, it was just mixing that all together. I don't know why, but again, we were out there in the middle of the prairie, not a soul as far as the eye could see, and it makes it that much better. I don't know if that would have been as good at home, truth be told. I don't know
Sounds
if it would
Sounds very
have.
Good.
It was good, yeah.
Isn't it kind of that you are what you eat? So, like, if the bird is feeding on those berries and then you pair it with that bird, it should be pretty good, that sort of thing.
Yep, absolutely. I think makes that's sense. Kind of, I've heard of, like, a blueberry grouse pizza.
Oh
yeah, Bob St. Pierre, a friend of mine from Pheasants Forever, he makes that pretty regularly, and he'll post a picture of that online. And I'm like, I gotta try it.
People are so creative.
They are, and you know, like you, when you make your food, you've got all these great photos. Like, did you go to school to figure out how to take photos of your food?
I like
that's
making
an
things
art
look
too.
Nice.
Yes, totally. Yeah. I take a picture and I'm like, nope, that doesn't look anything like these.
The trick is natural light. You got to turn off all the lights in the kitchen. Bring it near a window.
Yep.
Then you're good.
Yep. Most of my photos are on the deck because that's where I do most of my cooking. Yep. Outside, no lights. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so, what's next?
Well, I made this 2 days ago with my kids.
Is this what you sent me a picture of?
Yeah.
Nice.
This is kind of
I'm
more of
this
whole
this.
This whole recipe topic that we're talking about today came about because I just had shore lunch walleye and now like our freezer from hunting season, you know, I try to space it out so that I have food. I could eat wild game almost every meal and I wouldn't get sick of it. I love it. But I do, there's, you know, a gap between hunting season, so I can't just go replenish. So my freezer's getting down there right now. I'm ready to get back out in the field and hunt again, but I do still have some birds. So I brought out some rough grouse and pheasant. And rough grouse, if you've ever or not ever hunted for upland birds, rough grouse would be the king. They call it the king of upland bird hunting species because of the challenge to harvest them, but they are the king as far as table fare. I think a rough grouse tastes better than a chicken, or even a store-bought chicken. You know, some people are afraid of wild game, but rough grouse is so good. I would rate it rough grouse and probably chicken, then pheasant and or quail would be in there too, I guess. I don't know, but they're the top. Anyway, rough grouse wraps or pheasant wraps. My buddy George Lyle turned me onto this recipe years ago, and it's very similar to like pheasant jalapeno poppers, but it's a little bit different in that it's a wrap. So you take the, if you have the breast of the bird, you know, it's typically like a 6-inch by 4-inch breast. They're most pheasants or grouse are going to have a little bit thicker. So you want to tenderize it. You want to pat down that breast and flatten it out to about 1/4-inch thick. My little 4-year-old girl, she was beating on it like drums, you know, and we were flattening this thing out. It was great. And, so you get it to a real thin piece. Okay. Then you dice up jalapenos and onions. And then, I usually have a different seasoning that I mix up. You can do like a Creole seasoning. Otherwise, I used a sweet and sassy garlic pepper seasoning on some of them. And then there's another one called Grill In, Grill Out. It's made by Excalibur seasonings. They're delicious. So you just coat the breast with that. You put a big dollop of cream cheese in the middle of it, your diced onions, your diced jalapenos. You wrap up this breast into a ball. And then, of course, you grab 2 pieces of bacon and you wrap it around to stick a toothpick through it. The bacon adds that extra layer to hold it together, but also the flavors that come from that. So you have,
I thought we were talking lettuce wraps at first and it just got so much better than I was expecting.
All kinds of meat. Yes. Lots of meat. So you've got the flavors from the onion, the jalapeno gives a little bit of bite. You got some seasoning in there. You've got the juices of all the different meats in there. Sometimes, the biggest mistake people make when it comes to wild game is they overcook it. I shouldn't say sometimes. All the time. Mm-hmm. Every time. The biggest mistake people make is they overcook it. And so a pheasant or even a chicken or a quail or a grouse, they can dry out pretty good. So that the extra moisture you get from wrapping it with bacon kind of locks in that. You know, even the cream cheese, you just have all these juices that you end up with. You can bake it. I've done that. I've cooked it over an open fire on an island up in Canada. It's as good as it gets. But I usually grill it. And I've got a Camp Chef smoker. So depending on how much time I have, I can either go with a real low temperature and just kind of let it sit in there. The ball essentially will kind of like firm up. The bacon will wrap around it. And the juices that come out of it are just
sounds
like...
so good.
It's so good. And I have done this with ducks, with geese, basically any bird. And traditionally people will say, they'll call Canadian geese sky carp. They're kind of the bottom of the food chain. I've done this recipe with geese, and you've got this big 3-pound breast that comes off of a goose. Well, if you thinly slice it, you end up with something similar. You tenderize that, eat it down to 1/4-inch. And I've had people that don't hunt, that don't eat wild game, eat that before, and they're like, oh my gosh. So if you ever want to introduce somebody to wild game, any birds, this recipe is a for sure win, only because the flavors that come out of it
sounds
are just
so
like, it is. It is so good. That's kind of my go-to when it comes to birds.
Yeah, and well, we're talking about not letting birds dry out. So we talked, you know, definitely don't want to overcook it. Wrapping bacon.
Bacon is kind of like the savior for people when it comes to...
Yeah, cooking in butter is good. And then I've also done a pheasant recipe in a butter, again, white wine and chicken stock with like mushrooms and garlic and onion. So being able to cook them in kind of... It was on the stove, but in a good amount of liquid. For me, it was a good like, you know, to make sure I didn't mess up and overcook it and let it dry out too much. So cooking it, you know, in liquid like that with a lid on it can help give listeners a little leeway if you're nervous about overcooking.
Yeah. And I think again, like we mentioned earlier, overcooking is the number one mistake people make. And there's something about this is a wild bird that it's dirty or something. You know what I mean? Like there's that feeling that I'm going to just leave it a couple minutes longer to be sure. And that's what ruins it. And then people are like, you know what? I don't really like duck. I don't really like pheasant because it was just kind of gamey. Well, it's because you overcooked it. And that is 100% the reason why every single time.
Isn't it funny?
It takes on a different flavor that isn't enjoyable in your mouth.
Yeah. It's funny that that's where we are culturally, that it seems scarier, seems weirder to eat fish or meat that we get ourselves. It's like, that's supposed to come from like aisle four, right? Like that's right, the clean meat. But once you get, you know, used to it and start eating like that, it's...
I think something should be mentioned too about taking care of your birds. In this case, we're talking pheasants or quail or grouse. You do not want the bird sitting in your game pouch on a 65, 70 degree day all day. It's that meat is sitting there and you want to take care of it right away if you can. There's also some people that do hang their birds. And they'll hang them for, I don't know, Brandon, do you know how long they'll hang them for? You know what I'm talking about, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, I've done it up to like a week before. And if you have the right temperature, you're in that 30 to 40 degree temperature, that's kind of ideal for it. They think that the idea is that you're tenderizing that meat by hanging it. Just kind of like... a cow or a pig will hang at the butcher shop before it gets completely butchered. The hanging part of it releases, Brandon, you can help me out here, don't you?
Yeah, but I'm not exactly sure. I've seen the Reverend Hunter, Tony Jones, he does that with his birds. He hangs them in the fall and stuff like that. And he does have them up for a couple of days, but I don't know exactly the process or why he does it, but I know that's his thing.
Either way, if as long as you're taking the guts out, if we're going to get... We're going to get to it here. The guts need to come out because you don't want that to kind of, you know. Yeah. I mean, it speaks for itself. Keep your birds cool. Take care of them. And you will be amazed at the difference in flavor that those birds have. Okay.
Same as fish, too. You want to get
that? Absolutely. Yeah. Anything you're harvesting. I mean, I mean, and there's no reason that it would be... that you should ever think like, oh, this is a dirty creature. Mm-hmm. I gotta cook it longer. Again, it just somehow you need to get that out of your mind when you're going into it. And even if you're looking at it on the plate, like the best meat is medium rare. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, depending on, you know, with birds, 165 degrees. That's don't cook it 166. 165 kills anything you need to worry about. Take it off the second it hits that.
Get do you a use good, a thermometer always?
I do. I do. Yeah, I've got a digital thermometer, and I just stick it right in, and boom. Or like if I'm grilling something, my camp chef has the little probes that I can run through, and I'm always watching it, especially with like venison or pretty much anything. I don't want to overcook it by a degree.
Yeah. You're smart. I have so many more recipes that
Brandon,
I'm looking at right now.
Going?
I think we've been going for like 45 minutes.
Yep, 45.
Yeah. Okay, well then so we might have to do part two again. We get so sidetracked.
I know. Well, okay. I can go through a couple of these a little bit quick. Let me jump to salmon.
Do tell.
Yeah, so I have to like pick and choose because I've got like four things. So let me talk
okay,
smoked
just pick
salmon.
One. And
so,
if we need to come back on these later, that's fine. But do justice to what needs to be done here.
I love smoked salmon. And I have to come clean and say the only salmon I've caught, and I've fished for salmon probably five or six times, and it's all been kind of like late season salmon that I haven't actually kept, you know, and they are on the runs and they're a little bit, they get a little questionable near the end of their lives. But I've been given salmon by some of my, you know, angler friends or people that I've fished with. So I love cooking it. My favorite way to eat it. Okay. I'm going to choose my smoked salmon crepes. So smoked salmon.
Brandon's over there nodding.
Yeah. If you have a smoker yourself or like me have friends that have smokers and you've got some really good smoked salmon, I love making savory crepes. And the way that I did these, I just kind of made it up couple years ago and it's now like my favorite go-to. So in the crepe mix, and you can just kind of like Google a recipe, it's just like, I don't know, flour, salt, water, little egg, very simple. Add a bunch of fresh dill into the crepe mix itself. Now with crepes, this confuses a lot of people who haven't made them before. You just cook them in a nonstick pan, no butter, no oil, nothing like
that. Cast iron work?
Maybe, but I've done it always in like a what are they called? Just like a normal nonstick pan. You could try cast iron, but they really need to, since you don't put any like butter or oil down, it'd have to be a very well-seasoned cast iron pan,
that's what
I'd
ours
say.
Is. I don't cook anything
okay.
without
so,
it anymore.
So try it and report back.
Okay. I'm looking at pictures of it right now because you piqued my interest here. Yeah.
So, and you have to have crepes. The crepe itself has to be very thin. And I messed this up the first time I made them. I made them probably like a quarter. I mean, they were thin, but they just kind of felt a little like spongy. So you want them like paper thin. So you put a little bit of this crepe mix with dill in the pan. You just kind of wave the pan around, you know, let the mix spread out. Cooks for like 30 seconds, very quick. You flip it over and you can just peel it up like with your hands and flip it. Cook the other side. And then you can set the crepes just to the side. They don't need to be served warm or anything like that. So make a bunch of crepes. And then on top, you can either do sour cream, which I've tasted, but I actually prefer just plain Greek yogurt on top, smoked salmon, hard-boiled egg, capers, lemon zest, and you could do, I've done avocado. Fold them up. Like, I like to just do it simple. Fold them in half and then in fourths, and then top with a little salt, pepper, lemon zest, little dill on top if you want, and it's delicious.
It sounds amazing.
Breakfast, lunch, or dinner. What are you looking at?
Well, I just wanted to verify the temperature on my next recipe. Sorry. I was looking at crepes.
I was going to say, do you see any other?
Yeah. No, it looks phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, look at all these options right here. I'm sure yours are, you know.
Those are so much prettier than mine.
I doubt it.
So this picture I'm seeing, they're like all rolled up and nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like to just fold them in half and crepes. Yeah.
I mean, all those ingredients sound amazing.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that's something you can go to the store. You don't have to go salmon fishing. You can pick
that
up.
That's true. Yeah.
But go fishing for them.
Yeah, go fishing, ideally. I mean, I've certainly done it with store-bought.
Yeah, but I don't have access to salmon around here right now. So,
up north.
I am going to Alaska in a month, and I may have to, maybe somebody that has a salmon recipe that I could make out there could send it to me.
Yeah, I have friends that have cooked and smoked and cooked pink salmon on the North Shore of Minnesota.
Sounds amazing.
And certainly if you're fishing on the Great Lakes or whatever.
So. It sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is very simple. I like deer hunting. A lot of people do. Just in Minnesota, roughly 500,000 Minnesotans will go deer hunting this year.
Wow.
And there are a couple of cuts that come off of the deer if you butcher it yourself, the back straps and the tenderloins. Those are the two cuts of meat. And I don't get cute with this. This is just steak. And it's called the Ultimate Steak and Roast Seasoning made by Walton's. If you go to waltons.com, they sell basically anything and everything that you could ever need to process your meat. And they have this seasoning called the Ultimate Steak and Roast Seasoning. Everybody that I know that has tasted it, they're like, where'd you get it? I need it. So I like, my brother-in-law, he comes to me, he's like, hey, you got any more of that seasoning? Seriously, I use it on all my steaks now, but I just put it on that tenderloin or the back strap. You want to make sure that you've got an even, kind of like what I was telling you about with the walleye, you want to cook it evenly. So if there's a piece of meat that isn't as thick, that gets cut up separately and then everything gets cooked so that when I hit 145 degrees on the grill, that's the second it comes out. And then you let it sit. And it's just like cooking a steak. But the problem is people don't like venison if it's overcooked. Mm-hmm. And again, it goes back to, I'll leave it on a little bit longer. If you hit 150, it's going to continue to cook a little bit after you. So 145, I know some people that'll go a little bit less than that even, but I'm trying to tell you the safe number here. That's 145 degrees and then get it off of there and let it sit for a little bit. And then you can cook it up or slice it up and eat it. And it's that simple. Nothing else is needed. I mean, sure, you can pat it dry and, you know, make sure that your deer has been taken care of after you harvested it. That goes back to what we've been talking about this whole time. Take care of the wild game that you harvest if you want to enjoy eating it.
What is, by the way, we're doing this again at lunchtime and hearing all these recipes.
I know.
What were we thinking?
Yeah.
I'm getting hungry sitting here. We've got a few minutes left. I want to ask you, Travis, and Brandon, you can weigh in on this too. What's the most unique thing that you've ever caught or hunted and cooked? If you have one.
Brandon? I'm automatically out. I've never hunted. I've hunted twice. I've fished for nothing cool.
I don't have anything exotic that I can say it really stands out. I've been to a lot of wild game dinners, and I've eaten a lot of, We were on a shoot down in Florida probably a little over 10 years ago probably, and it was an alligator hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the guys got an alligator, and then we cooked that up that night.
Did they fry it? Did they do the little nuggets?
Yeah, they
nuggets?
Did the nuggets.
Yeah, that's
and
what I've had.
It's like chicken. Yeah. It was a little bit more rubbery, and I think we've talked about it on the show before, but I think that's probably... Brandon and I were just talking earlier with another guy, and we were talking about snake.
Oh, yeah.
And I had the most disgusting... That's the most disgusting thing I've ever put in my mouth. It was this big python, I think, from Florida. It was at a Pheasants Forever banquet.
That makes sense that it's a... If it was a python...
Yeah, versus a rattlesnake. Because Brandon's saying he's had rattlesnake before.
Yeah, yeah, it's fine. It's like, it's not bad at all, but I can imagine something fatty, just like anything else. Like I was saying before, you are what you eat. And if you're a python, if you're just eating everything that's in your way...
It was a thick cut. You know, it was a big, fat snake. And it was just like, I think... The part that I had wasn't cooked enough. So I made this comparison to it before. But have you ever had a head cheese before?
I don't think I've... I know... No, I don't think I ever have.
It's almost... Brandon, have you had it?
I have seen it I feel like been frightened.
I can very much imagine what it tastes like and feels like. And,
it's kind of like
I see
a gelatin
it.
Of almost sort of.
Like meat jello.
Yeah, meat jello.
That's kind of the texture that this snake had. But then in my mind, I don't like snakes to begin with. So in my mind then, you know, there's that. And then this thing is squishing around in my mouth. And it was not like, it was the least like, oh gosh. I mean...
Lose-lose all the way
across. It was a lose-lose.
Hey, I'm no longer hungry. Thanks. You solved the issue. I appreciate it.
You cured us.
I did not harvest it. Thank goodness. I had no part in it. I'm not a fan of snakes. Yeah. I'll try most anything once. I would say I did a show probably 5 years ago with an insect eater.
Mm-hmm.
And we went out and we had these butterfly nets and we caught our own grasshoppers and we cooked them up. And they were... fine, but she seasoned them to the point where it tasted like seasoning.
I've had fried grasshoppers, but they're like teriyaki and just salty and crunchy.
It covered the flavor so much. Yeah, it was just a crunch, you know, when you bit down on it. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I prefer to go for things that I enjoy.
Yeah.
You know?
So
or
one
I don't
of,
take them.
One of my favorite memories of fishing. So I've got family that lives in Greece.
Yeah.
And one of my... aunts, more or less, there. It's like my mom's cousin there. She and her husband have this little fishing boat that they take out for. And it's like exactly what you hope it would look like. It's like this white and blue wooden little Greek fishing boat. And they've taken me out a couple times. I've had the opportunity to go a few times over the last few years, calamari fishing. And you hand line for them. So you've got this like wheel, essentially, with, you know, line around it and probably a dozen or so lures on each one. So hand line fishing for them. And, you know, we've all probably, you know, we eat calamari at restaurants. It's not that unique or unusual, but getting to catch them and, when you're there and eat them right there was such a fun experience. And I mean, it's exactly like, you know, you imagine them, you know, you've probably seen them in grocery stores and stuff. They're kind of funky and slimy looking, but they're super easy to clean. You just kind of like pop the head off. And there's like one bone inside that, you know, once in a while they accidentally leave in. So you probably have seen it before at restaurants. You take that out. And we did a mix of like regular flour, semolina flour, and not even like salt or pepper, and just fried them, topped them with some lemon from the garden out back. And in Greece, they like to serve it alongside this Greek spirit called tsipras that basically tastes like tequila. So it actually goes pretty well with it, but it was probably one of the best little lunches that I've ever had.
Wow. It reminds me of a time my wife and I, we were out on a boat out of Rhode Island and we caught some huge striped bass.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy that we're with, he brought this, you're basically talking about sushi, you know, and he cut it up right there on our way back into the mainland. There was three couples and we just like almost ate an entire bass on the way in. We're talking like a 30-pound fish. Like he had the soy sauce or wasabi or whatever it was. Like I had all of this stuff that he set out and then he thinly sliced this chunk of meat and we ate it. And it's like, you'll never have better. I mean, that's just, we go back to if you're out there in the elements with it and eating it. And that, I wish we could do that with freshwater fish here.
Yeah.
I have a friend that makes ceviche out of walleye.
Oh.
And he straddles Well, Matt Peters, who was in here for our last show. Yeah. He straddles the boundary on what's safe to do, but he claims that it there's enough of the citrus or whatever in there.
It does technically cook the fish when you do ceviche. The citrus does cook it.
Yeah.
But I've never had it with a freshwater fish.
Exactly. Ceviche. Most people wouldn't do that, but he does, and it's delicious.
He's still
alive. He's abnormal for sure, but I can call him that because he's my friend. But so I think... Yeah, that goes back to just like whatever you're harvesting in that space, if you can find a way to eat it right there, it just like, oh man, it takes it to a whole nother level.
Yeah. I've had some snapper on the beach that actually one snapper in particular that I wrangled out of a bull shark's jaws. I didn't
own hands?
No, the bull shark let it go.
I thought we were having a good
wrangle,
story time
I mean
here,
the bull
Brandon.
Shark let it go. But I was a little shaken up. Bull shark next to my kayak in Panama. Oh. But yeah, we ate that. It was a yellow snapper, just like you said, with little wasabi, little soy sauce right on the beach. Delicious.
That sounds amazing. Yeah. Before we close, I do want to say, because I don't know if we'll get back to this topic again. Maybe I have more to talk about. I know you have a long list as well. But one thing that I've been doing now that I recommend or encourage other parents to do, my kids, you know, are getting into hunting. My son has hunted turkeys the last 2 years and gotten a turkey each of the last 2 years. And for us, it's a big deal too. Everything that we harvest we're going to bring it full circle. We're going to cook it, prepare it. I've had them become pretty active in making these meals as well. And my hope is that they'll enjoy the process start to finish like I do. And then they see where it comes from and where it goes and how they get to enjoy it. And they love jerky. They just love jerky. And it's one of those things that anybody can make out of basically any bird or animal that you harvest. But if you do it with your kids, you can really create kind of a fun time with them. But when they are enjoying it, it's a great snack that's healthy for the most part. And my kids are constantly snacking on it. It goes so quickly. But I just think being able to prepare a meal or something that you've harvested together, prepare it together, and then eat it and enjoy it. It just keeps that love for the outdoors as something more than just we're going out there for the day and then I don't see what happens. Dad cleans it or mom cleans it or whatever. And then all of a sudden maybe I eat it or somebody else does. Because a lot of times people go on a hunt and they love the hunt, but they don't necessarily keep that food element alive afterwards, which I think is a very important part.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, are we going to wrap it up now?
I think so.
We do have more to talk about, but we can touch base on a few more of the listener questions that we didn't get to in the start of the next podcast. And also, if you do connect with us on Instagram, let us know what you would like us to cover on future episodes. So whether it's guest ideas or other questions or things that you want to talk about. Anything else that you want to add, Travis?
I think you did well today.
Oh, thank you. I think you did well, too.
Hey, thanks. Appreciate that.
You too,
I'm looking
Brandon.
At this list, and I'm like, we could keep going. Like,
we could.
If you only could eat one freshwater fish from here on out, what would you do? And how would you prepare it?
Okay, we got to answer that one.
No, we're not. We'll just let people come back next week.
Okay, we will answer it at the start of the next show.
There you go.
All right, well, thanks, everyone, for tuning in. And something Travis was just alluding to, but we always like to put out there, we really hope that this podcast and the show encourages you to spend more time outside. And if you are an avid outdoorsman or outdoorswoman, we hope that you take some time to introduce it to friends and family, and especially the kids out there. I think that's it. So we'll see you guys next time.